Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast. We have my man Simon Pagino, 2016 Verizon IndyCar Series champion, coming off a year where he won the most races and dominated, absolutely dominated the season finale. Really proving to everybody, pole position, fastest everything, led everything, just destroyed the field, proved that there was no fluke, there was nobody better, there was no one else destined to win this 2016 championship for Team Penske and Chevrolet while Roger Penske was celebrating the 50th anniversary of his team. So that's what we spoke about, the year. Didn't go into career and history and background and whatnot. Simon and I know each other well enough and have been friends long enough to where I probably run out of really interesting questions, so I'll have to save that for another day when I can come up with better ideas. But for this, it was truly about 2016, but also 2015. It was not the most complimentary start to his relationship once he joined Team Penske. I expected him and his engineer Ben Bretzman to be just on the boil from the beginning, and it didn't happen. So I know he's been asked many times, what went wrong? Why didn't things click in 2015? I asked him the same thing, and I think we got a little bit deeper into why. I don't know if Simon's ever really given in-depth answers on that. It's normally been about gelling and feeling one another out. It's a learning process. All those things are true, but I think there was something on the technical side which took a little bit of time for him to find his comfort zone. Went into the mental side of the things. That's big for Simon. If you know anything about Pagino, you know that this isn't a guy who just drives purely by instinct. He is a big thinker, a cerebral IndyCar driver, and just driver in general. So got into a lot of that. And altogether, just looked at the year. This was his dream. He's achieved his dream. Was celebrated heavily afterwards by going on a tour of France back home with the Astor Cup, with the IndyCar Series to go from town to town to barnstorm his where he was born and be celebrated there. But he wasn't quite done after winning that IndyCar championship at Sonoma Raceway in the middle of September. Still had one other job to do, and that was at the IMSA season finale, where he was the third driver of the Action Express Racing Corvette Daytona prototype, driven by Dane Cameron full-time and his partner Eric Curran, and they won the championship there. So got into that a little bit about how Simon couldn't exactly relax after his big IndyCar day in Sonoma. Nonetheless, lovely guy, truly a lovely guy, and just about everybody I know was so happy for him to see him achieve not only what we knew he was capable of to become an IndyCar champion, but to do it in such a demonstrative way. Be harder to do it again in 2017. Will Power starting off at full strength and everyone else gunning for him. It won't be easy to repeat, but I think we saw something in Simon. I think he confirmed something in himself that leads me to believe he's going to be vying for a championship every year for the next many. So if you're new to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, there are 100 episodes that have been put up before this. You can find all of them on podbean.com, P-O-D-B-E-A-N. And if you are an iTunes person, you can subscribe to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast there. And here we go with my man, Simon Pagino. The champ is here. You know, I love the fact, Simon, that I get to call you champ now. Not as if you haven't done things in your formative years and coming up to call you champ, but being able to be called IndyCar champion, brother. I don't know. Is that ever going to get old? Do you love it? Tell me about the feeling of having this honor and distinction.
Oh, man, I tell you, it's the best nickname that you can imagine for a race driver. So it's been incredible. You know, it's even more special when it comes from your peers and media people working with you all the time. But it's even more special when it comes from people from the industry who call you champ. It's you know, it means a lot. Obviously, it takes a lot of dedication, a lot of your life to get to this point. So when you make a dream come true at this level, it's just like flying on the clouds. So I'm delighted. You know, it's been a very busy time where media opportunities were strong and we had to milk it in a way, and I also had to be available for a lot of needs basically from our partners at Team Penske. So it's been busy, but finally settling down and and I'm about to, I'm basically already heading to 2017 to try to do it again.
Well, before we wind the clock back to your championship run, I don't know if I should say it amazed me. I thought it said a lot about you. So a couple weeks, maybe a week, two ago, I get a text from you out of nowhere, and you're talking about, you know, here we are at the beginning of December, essentially, and you're poring over in-car videos of Formula One drivers trying to pick up any techniques, any areas that you might observe that you should try or consider to improve your game. And while I completely love that, it's also, I think, a bit of a revelation, because there might be some racing fans who think, oh, he's a champ, huge ego, you know, nothing but balls and confidence. The fact that the reigning IndyCar champion at the beginning of December is watching F1 in-car videos trying to pick up any little areas he might improve, that I think might surprise some people.
Well, thanks, Marshall. It's something I love doing. You know, I do it in between every races, but I also do it during the off season. It's also a way for me to get motivation back. You know, throughout the season, it's so physically demanding, mentally demanding to be at the top that you get worn out. And at the end of the day, you still need to love what you do. It's very important. So there's a little gap where you try to not think about racing after the championship is over. But then at some point, you need to get back in the thinking mode of how am I going to get better? Because like we talked about, it's harder to do it again. So the second time is even harder than the first one. So, you know, obviously, I'm passionate about my sport. I'm passionate about improving myself. Competitivity is probably one of my stronger traits of character. So, I try to always embrace any driving style. You know, somebody that really impressed me this year was Verstappen in Formula One, for example.
Really?
Where he came out with something else, a different way of driving, a bit controversial at times on track. And I thought, hey, let's just look at this guy. But I'm still looking at Ayrton Senna's driving style too, and Alain Prost and Hamilton, and there's a lot to learn from these guys. Like there's a lot to learn from the NASCAR guys on ovals. So I study a lot. I'm very number savvy, I would say.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, you and I have shared an appreciation for in-car videos for a while, and I think we did our first visor cam a couple years ago, and that seemed to resonate. So that's something else we need to try and get back into next year. But before I get too far into the future, you know, I think I look at your 2016 season and the big questions coming into the season: how is he going to improve what we saw in 2015? Because I think 15 surprised many of us, yourself included. Moved to Team Penske from Sam Schmidt's team. Your friend and trusty engineer Ben Bretzman follows with you. Expectations, for me at least, were, well, good Lord, Simon plus Ben plus all of Penske's resources plus Chevy, this should be an instant upgrade in overall competitiveness. But that didn't happen right away. You've been asked this probably a million times, so I apologize if I'm going down somewhat of a boring lane, but one thing I didn't fully understand is, yeah, I understand it's a new environment, but if I'm looking at communication, you going to Penske with your engineer, I would have thought, would have really erased any major concerns about communication and being able to create the environment and the setups that you needed. What wasn't I seeing that have you and Ben going there together didn't necessarily mean everything would click as a whole in that first season?
Yeah, this is very true, Marshall. It's a very good point. I would say that there's a lot of things we don't see from outside, and even us inside, on the very inside, there's so many factors that come in play that it's only when you switch team that you realize you really need to nail down every little thing. Every department has a big importance in the overall results. I think it's, you know, as someone who likes numbers, it's all about the equation, and at the end of the equation is the result. But there are all these little things that you have to add up and add together to make a for a good result. So, you know, obviously we had the relationship, Ben and I, to keep going, which was a blessing. I think it definitely helped for us to make 2016 the way it was. But in 2015, we changed team, definitely new engine. I used to work with Honda, now I was working with Chevy. Different way to drive the engine. Also, the new aero kit came out, and the way the car was behaving was very different. Also, the Penske setup was quite a bit different in terms of feel as the Schmidt car was. So I had to adapt to that.
That was one of my suspicions, that I'm not sure if it was purely a damping and ride thing, but that was my initial suspicion that, I wonder if after years of developing a damping package, because in IndyCar it's frankly one of the few areas where you can really personalize things, but that was one of my, you know, my initial thoughts were, I wonder if the direction Penske has found that works for them might be a little bit different than what Simon and Ben liked and came up with at Schmidt, and how long will it take to shape the vehicle towards your preference at your new home?
Yeah, it was very different, and it took a little while to adapt. But I would say that wasn't the main thing. I think it was a succession of things, and it's a whole team building together. At the end of the day, you know, and I've said that during the off season, but I'm a little bit of a you know, in soccer we call it a captain. There's a captain in the team. I'm not the captain because that's Roger, but I should call myself the little coach, because the real coach is Tim Sindrick. But I'm the little coach of my little team. You know, on the 22 car, it's my job to motivate my guys to give me 100%. It's my job to show them that I'm giving them 100%, and it's a snowball effect. You know, the pit crew. Everything that they do in the pit stop is so important. The strategies with Kai Moyer, that relationship, him understanding how to extract the best out of me was very important too. And I think it took us a whole year to understand each other and get to that level all together. But it's not just one thing. It's one of those succession of things that made us successful in 16.
So you come into the season. Team is the same around you. What's different? What's different for you as you're heading into the first tests of 2016? You have a little bit of, you know, whether it's improvements, obviously, on the Chevy side, team on the R&D side, but what do you feel different, and when do you feel whatever it was when 2016 kicked off on the competition side, like, okay, there's something different here?
It started in the off season testing when we found something on the car that I really liked, made me confident. I built a lot of confidence over the winter mentally. I worked really hard mentally at not rebuilding, but continuing to build myself after a tough season in 15, where we didn't have much good luck either. So mentally, I did a lot of very, very good work, and I'm hoping I'm going to get to the next level again for 17. But that would be the biggest change in myself, and the whole team clicked. I think it was, you know, seeing people coming to work with a smile on their face and just loving to work all together. I think that was the key of the 22 car.
So tell me if this felt familiar to you, the first four or five races of the year. I look back at your 2012, your first full season in IndyCar. You opened the season with a really strong and consistent run. Sixth at St. Pete, fifth at Barber, second at Long Beach. Moved to 2013, St. Pete, definitely one to forget. But your sixth, your eighth, your ninth, your eighth. Your last year was Schmidt in 2014. You start off the season fifth again, fourth, then win. Again, 2015, bit of a learning year, but we get to 2016 and that Simon Pagenaud fast and consistent and finishing thing is back, but it's not only back. Instead of it being a fifth and a fifth and a fourth, it's second, win. It seems to me
win.
Well, it seems to me that blueprint that was working so well when you first came into IndyCar really showed itself, but to a much higher level in 2016 with Penske. Is that, were you feeling that kind of flow again right off the bat?
I felt, you know, the biggest thing, Marshall, is there was a potential that you could reach a Schmidt, which I think we did, that we extracted the best out of the equipment, out of the people, and that was a well-oiled machine by 2014. And I think the performance that we were having all those 3 years were amazing, and the group never changed. And I think we were at full potential. Now I have a better car because the resource in development is much stronger at Penske. The cars are definitely very strong. The teammates are very strong. So the potential is higher. And basically, when you manage to reach your own potential and improve every little department, like I said earlier, the overall potential is stronger. And I think that's what was happening in 16. It felt great. I mean, it was the best fun I've ever had this start of the season.
So you win three in a row, Long Beach, Barber, IMS Road Course. You head into the Indy 500, and my looking back retrospectively on your 2016, as you walk into the 500, the 100th 500, I thought of Montoya's 2015 season, where he did well leading up to the 500, but he really used not only the win there, but the double points from that win really helped him in his championship run. Obviously, things spun out a little bit at the finale for Juan in 15. Did you, in your own car, in your own space at the end of 15, do you take any notes from that? Did anything come to mind of like, wow, he just led the entire championship and then it, you know, lost sight of it halfway through the final race? Was any of that in your mind as you were preparing for 16 and as you're going into the 500 saying, double points, I could use those?
No, I really treat Indianapolis as a one-off. You know, it's a difficult one. Unless you're not in for the win, then you're not really thinking about points. I mean, that's how I approach it. I think it's a whole month of racing at that track, testing, and the track changes every day. So it's very difficult to keep sight of the championship for that long race, I would say. And it's the race that everybody wants to win. So I would say that I felt like I succeeded at my task all the way up to the 500. Now I was at best 500, and my job was to do the same thing for that one race. So I focused really hard at trying to give a good read to Ben, basically my engineer, so we could have the best car in the race. Unfortunately, we had a mechanical problem in the race that took us out of it. But I think we were strong enough to fight for podium at least. But I certainly, toward the end of the season, though, I certainly looked at what happened to Montoya in 2015. And one of the things that the Ferran, my Yoda, has always pushed me to remember is to basically, your best defense is attack. And especially me, as who I am as a person and a driver, you know, I don't crash much, touch wood. I don't take too many chances, and it's all very calculated. So it's about recognizing your strengths and your weakness. And I definitely realized this year at my best that I needed to be more aggressive, and that when I was aggressive, maybe my aggressive was not, the Montoya aggressive, for example. So it worked out really good for me to just stay on the same path and just remain aggressive all season.
Was there any frustration for you leaving the 500? And I say that because you were really strong. I mean, you were really strong. And I think for anybody that, you know, says, well, he has to win a big or important oval race before we can say that, you know, he's a complete IndyCar driver. I don't know, man. You obviously didn't win the Indy 500, but I can tell you that you performed all month, and especially in the race, like you really get that place.
I love that place. It's a different feel to to Iowa, you know, for example. It's a different feel to Texas. I love that place. I just love it. And quite frankly, I mean, the Penske cars feel awesome there. We do so much development for that track that it reminds me of doing the 24 Hours of Le Mans with Peugeot. You know, the car was designed for that track. And I enjoy it. I enjoy having people like Rick Mears next to me and explaining me how to, you know, tackle traffic. And seeing Montoya handle it in 2015 was a source of inspiration. Obviously, you know, Helio, I mean, he's won there three times. So, so you know, I have the chance to have these guys as my teammates. And, I just love that place. I just really have so much desire to do well there that it's pushing me, it's pushing my limit further away. But I would say, you know, I think we're getting there. I think there's always something to improve. And I think my learning curve is still on a pretty good run here.
So our boy Will Power has a tough start to his season. Obviously missed the first race. Was not feeling particularly good physically. You know, had dealt with some physical issues he's spoken about during the off season, and that held him back a little bit. But he's starting to rally pretty hard by this point. He's starting to feel better, starting to put up a pretty good fight. You come out of Indy in 19th. You have your only two back-to-back, I guess you could say, bad races. Indy 19th, the first round of Detroit 13th. Rest of the year, you don't have any, you know, bad back-to-back runs. You grab another second at Detroit. Road America wasn't your best friend in 13th, but then you're fourth at Iowa, ninth at Toronto, win again at Mid-Ohio. Tell me about that point leading up to Mid-Ohio, maybe, because again, we know that Will had a slow start to the year, but if I'm looking at championship contenders, that crazy-ass Australian pal of yours under the same tent, he's starting to bring the heat. Are you feeling it all by that point, or are you just, you know, keeping your eyes down and focused on your world?
Well, and yeah, to complete my answer to your last question, after Indy, at that point, honestly, it was sadness, not frustration. It was more sadness because you put so much heart into it, and racing is all about emotion too, you know, and you try to keep your emotion always steady, do the best job you can. But sadness was the word after Indy, feeling like I had the chance to maybe win 2 years in a row and didn't have that opportunity. But I would say also for Will, you know, Sam Pete, seeing what happened and how he said there was sadness there too. We've known each other for a long time. I never wish to anyone to leave what he's been through. I don't really know, you know, what was the details of what happened to him, but it's it was sad not to see him on the grid at Sam Pete. And for sure, I mean, he was very strong in the mid-season, and we had a bit of a slump on the 22 car. Just caught some bad luck, some bad yellows, and despite our performance, I mean, we got two poles in Detroit, so the performance was there. But then we ended up getting a bad yellow at the first race, and we finished 13th, I think, just trying to save fuel on the last lap, and didn't have enough fuel to finish. And then in Toronto, we call a bad yellow again, and Will wins. And every time we had a bad race, Will wins. So it's same in Pocono. I crash, he wins. It's like, wow, every time I have a bad race, he wins. So it was meant to be. It certainly felt that way, like it was meant to be all the way to the end, that it wasn't going to be easy. And it certainly woke me up. I would say it woke me up right after Pocono, and that's why I went to Texas with the knife between my teeth, and I decided to grab my destiny in my own hands. I would say that it was from Indy to Pocono, it was a bit of a slump there, even though Mid-Ohio was in the middle with a win. I would say the real wake-up call was Pocono and going into Texas, and I would say that's where we turned the championship around.
So, last race of the year, obviously, Will needs cartoon anvils to fall out of the sky and hit you for things to go his way. But, you know, you had, as we saw last year at Sonoma for Montoya, halfway through the race, the guy lost the championship he'd held since the first round. So it could happen. You had a race where, in theory, the most pressure of the entire year would be on your shoulders. You make a mistake, you could throw it all away. What kind of Simon Pagenaud is going to turn up? Who is this guy? Who is this potential new champion? And what do? You kick the living crap out of everyone from start to finish, pole position, lead the thing, you know, destroy everybody, win the thing. I don't know if, well, tell me if you agree, if there was another race that you felt was your best of the year, if not best of your career, but I look at Sonoma as anybody who had any questions, if the correct champion is being crowned, this guy just made a massive statement about where this championship belongs. Do you look at Sonoma as one of your best ever, or are there other IndyCar races that you think you actually made a bigger statement?
Marshall, I don't know if you realize, but just talking about it gives me chills. It was what an incredible weekend. It was definitely my best race weekend all around of my whole career. You asked me about pressure. And, you know, like I said to you earlier, I worked so hard mentally to get to this point and being able to manage my emotion. The most pressure I felt was the week, I believe it was a week prior to the race, we had a test at Sonoma.
Yeah.
And we were not particularly fast, which you'll see, I'm never really that fast in testing because, you know, we have different plans and you try different things and you try to answer questions with set up on the race car, you know, and trying to be more specific is, you know, you want to find some stability on the race car when what is rear toe going to do for you, you know, things like that. So you might be tuning the car for what you need rather than tuning it for the racetrack. And then at that test, that's exactly what we did. We tried to forget about the lap time and just focus on finding the tools for the race weekend. It's a big bet because, we left the test. I think we were 11th.
Yeah, yeah. I was there. I remember you didn't have a big smile when you left.
No, well, I didn't because, you know, when I at the end of the day, you always look at lap time because the clock never lies. But it took me 2 days to gather my thoughts and realize that we really did a good job at that test. And then a lot of discussion with Ben Bretzman to suit the car to my style for the track and what we were really going to need for that weekend, because the racetrack is always different on a race weekend than it is at a test, because of the sun, because of the different categories and the different tires going on the racetrack during the race weekend. So everything changes. You have less time on the track. There's no push to pass either allowed during sessions and qualification. So I felt like we actually had a great understanding, but it took me about a good 3-4 days to understand that we were in good shape. And then I worked mentally and showed up in Sonoma with a lot of confidence built up, and I went on and definitely performed at my best level.
Well, I think you also had a new turbo BMW 2002 that was maybe inspiring you to go really fast. That was one of
your... That may have helped. I love cars. I'm a big car guy, so collection's growing. I acquired a BMW 2002, which was one of my dad's dream car when he was a kid. And
We got to lay some credit here about how that car came into your world too. You know, we don't want to short Haley on her role here.
Yeah, she did a good job. She was the one. So we got the car on an auction, and I wasn't going to do it because I felt guilty for allowing me this pleasure. So she knows how hard I work, and she bid on the auction for me, and came back from the race shop one day, and she was all smiley, and she shows me a cell phone, and she's got a picture of the winning bid. And she said to me, "I did it." I said, "What do you do?" She said, "I got the car." "You got the car?" And yeah, she got the car. So it was a really cool moment for us, and certainly one of the best memories I've had we will have for a long time, I think.
Well, brother, I mean, let's be honest here. You're feeling guilty about, you know, wanting something for yourself that's, you know, a BMW 2002. It seems like every day on Graham Rahal's Instagram, he's got some $300,000 Porsche that he's bought. So, you know, I mean, again, comparatively, it's okay. You just keep in mind there are other drivers who are spending, you know, the equivalent of a small house on cars on a weekly basis. I think you deserve a lovely little 2002 that has some family significance to it.
Well, you know, it's about what you dream of, and you know, Graham. I think Graham actually makes money out of it, so
he's
pretty good. He's very good at it, but yeah, it's about, you know, what makes sense for you. I mean, for me, it's you know, I've got a Mustang because my grandpa was had a Mustang when I grew up, and my dad dreamt about a BMW 2002, and I got it now. So it's about what's relevant for you in your life. And for me, it's my family and the stories of my family.
My dad used to race a 2002 when he was a mechanic in Chicago at the Foreign Car Hospital. And so there's some family love for those as well here. So tell me...
I love these cars, yeah.
Tell me about driving into Victory Lane at Sonoma Raceway. You come up the little hill there, make the right into Victory Lane. They pull back the gate for you to pull through. You've got your Penske crew. You've got your family there. You've got Roger. Brother, I mean, I don't know what it's like arriving at the pearly gates in heaven and who's waiting there for you to welcome you in. But I, having been in Victory Lane, watching you pull up and come to a stop, it just struck me that that must have been one of the coolest things in the world to, you know, have the car wheel in slowly and just see all the people you love, all the people you work with and you fought with to get this championship, just waiting to receive you.
It was amazing. It was the best feeling in the world. The problem is I ran out of fuel on the in-lap, so it took a while to get me back there. I wish I could have showed up in the burnout style at Victory Lane, but I had a lot of time to actually cool down on my way back to Victory Lane. But, you know, it's a weekend where I try to keep my emotions so controlled that when I crossed the finish line, it was a weight off my shoulder, but it was normal. It felt normal because I compute myself so much at making that moment normal because that's what I should be doing if I do a good job. So when I crossed that finish line, I thought about it so much. I thought about that moment so much that it was normal. It wasn't like something fell from the sky. It felt like this was my work. I did my work, and it worked out. So it was normal to get to that point. It's a little sad to say because it didn't feel as exciting as I thought it was going to be. It became more exciting as I realized it happened. And it's almost like there's two Simon. There's the racer and there's the Simon outside the race car on a daily basis. And it took me a while to get back to the other Simon that's the race fan and that was the kid that dreamt about being a race car driver. So, you know, you got to be a shark when you're in the race car. You can't be emotional or anything like that. But having Roger there, I think, was one of the key moments for me. When he came to shake my hand and said that there was no beating me that weekend, I think, you know, another very special moment was having Will actually come to the podium and shake my hand. And,
yeah.
Tell me I was the champion. That was very special to me. And Elio, you know, showed up too and was so happy for me. I think that those were the very, very high moments. And obviously having Haley there was, you know, we've been through so much during the year with my back problem at Mid-Ohio. And we go through so much because it's, you know, our whole life is about racing. So, you know, we put aside a lot of our personal life for this. So it felt like we won together, and that was very special. And obviously, 7 years of relationship with Bretzman, my engineer, was also something very special. So a lot of things went through my mind, but it took a while to sink in, I would say, longer than I imagined.
I also was really happy for Billy Vincent, who went through some highs and lows at Penske, came so close to winning championships as Will Power's crew chief, and then there were some changes made there. He left left Penske, went and did some stuff outside, was invited back, and it was really cool to see him as well. He and his new wife now just, you know, so relieved. So it was just a really cool thing. I mean, granted, every championship is special. The people that earn every championship obviously do incredible things. But for me, it's just really nice when you also know that whether it's yourself, whether it's Ben, whether it's Billy, whether it's, you know, up and down, there's so many people that have really given something extra or gone through their own trials and tribulations to get there. So this one just seemed to have so many great sub-stories to the overriding story.
Billy he's an amazing crew chief, and he's also really good at relationship. And I think he built that 22 team really well around him. You know, the whole Penske team is, you know, it's a really good atmosphere. But yeah, Billy came so close, and you know, it's funny. I was talking to we had the Penske holiday party yesterday, and talking to a lot of my crew, and I realized a lot of them never had a championship before, so
wow.
It was a very special time, and I think, you know, it shows that there's even more potential for us to unleash for next year. So we already have a lot of motivation, and that's pretty cool.
Couple last questions for you, Simon, before we wrap up here. So you win the championship, yay, awesome! You're going to go into the off season and just relax and go to the Bahamas and sit on the beach. No, you're not done racing, man.
I wish I did.
You're not done racing yet. You were part of the Action Express Racing team on the number 31 car, the Corvette Daytona prototype, driven full-time by our friend Dane Cameron and Eric Curran. I was a part of that team to kick off the season. When you're done with Sonoma, again, you might be in a different pair of overalls, but you still had 10 hours of work to do at Petit Le Mans. How did that affect your post-Sonoma days? Because you obviously have tons of media to do on the IndyCar side and this and that, but you also realize that, man, maybe I have to stay in that racer's mindset for a couple more weeks before I can truly let myself relax?
Yeah, it was an interesting end of September, I would say, because we had such... the next morning, I stayed in my race suit for 5 hours after the race was finished, just to cover all the media, and didn't have time to take a shower. And then we finally started celebrating with the team around midnight. So, tell you, there was not much sleep. There was a very early wake-up call the next day to cover all the media outlet in San Francisco. Then we went straight to New York for a whole week. And after that, I had a test... at Aircap Lake with Penske to prepare for 17 already. So let me tell you, the first few laps where my eyes were not seeing really clearly at Road America, but I took a little time to adjust. And then right away I had to go to Petit Le Mans, and I have to say it's definitely difficult to get prepared in the best situation possible, the best way possible like this when you're that busy. But in the car, Dane and Eric Curran, Dane Cameron and Eric Curran, they're super teammates. They did a tremendous job all year. I was so happy for them to see that they were in a position to win the championship, because they already were the year before, and the championship slipped away from them. So my whole goal that weekend was to do everything I could to avoid crashing the car and make sure that I was going to be fast enough to have them clinch it. But my number one priority was no mistake, and I focused on that, and I was fast enough, plenty fast, and Dane was super fast, and Eric did a tremendous job leading most of his stints as well. So so we ended up winning the championship, but yeah, I would say it was a busy time, but I was really glad that I could be part of it. It's amazing to, you know, have the chance to win two championships in 1 year. It's a great feeling, but yeah, it was a bit of an adjustment also to get in a prototype car. That took me a little while.
Well, I remember seeing you that night after you won were like, yeah, you're a greedy bastard, Paz, you know, you already got the IndyCar championship, and you gotta get another one, come on, man, you gotta leave something for other people. But it was just fun to see you without all the IndyCar pressure, and granted, but there, you know, it's not as if you raced in the 31 car without pressure. As you said, you needed to make sure that you did everything to help them earn their season-long championship, but I know that they also took pride in the fact that they have the effing brand new IndyCar champ coming out to help, you know, for the final race. Obviously, you're there for the opening of the season as well, the endurance races, but it just seemed like a really magical time for you, man, where I think when you look back years from now, it was a 2 or 3 week stretch where everything you turned, everything you touched seemed to turn to gold.
Yeah, it was great. And I tell you, one of the things I felt in Petit Le Mans was, like you said, a lot of the pressure I was putting on my shoulder was gone. So I felt like a free man almost. And I think that's going to be big for me next year as well. I just feel a lot more relieved and like I've accomplished one of the things I wanted to do. And that was one step towards better accomplishment for myself. So it's very difficult to manage to get your first major championship like this. So I would say that I feel like a different driver, a different man, and I also feel like I have a better. I can set back a little bit more and see things a little better right now. So it was a very good weekend. Fun driving, just enjoying it, and trying not to pressure myself too much.
It's a good segue into one of the last questions I had for you. So knowing that you kept an incredibly busy 2016 full-time IndyCar program, obviously that's your number one job, but also adding in multiple endurance races with Action Express, I think of all the things that are hardest to do in sport, getting that first championship in whatever discipline, it's usually huge. It's a monumental achievement. And then the thing that's even harder is holding on to it and getting a second one. What do you look at for 2017? Do you say, you know, should I stick with that same formula of being really busy, IndyCar, sports cars, go, go, go? Or do you think it's smarter to narrow your focus a little bit and say, okay, holding on to that championship is definitely, that's the elusive prize that most people can't do. Maybe I should really just focus on IndyCar first and foremost.
Yeah, I think it's a little different than any other year for me. You know, obviously, I've been very, very busy. It's difficult to comprehend it and to see our schedule. You know, I've been very busy with a lot of days away from home, and I need to relax physically and mentally. Where I really feel like I pushed myself very, very hard this year. And definitely, you know, the Mid-Ohio back problem was a bit of a setback. So I need to take care of myself, and make sure that you know, I restart fresh in 2017. So I'm going to prioritize on the IndyCar season with Tim Penske, which is always my main program. But I'm going to prioritize on that and just focus on being ready for St. Pete this year.
So you had a great year, obviously. And then you finish Petit Le Mans, and then you have what I would imagine was a pretty cool thing. You are IndyCar's newest European champion, and get to go and fly the flag and celebrate at home on a pretty cool tour. What was it like heading home to France and just being able to go on that celebration tour? You know, saw lots of Twitter pics of you, whether it's on this TV show or that TV show, or at the Eiffel Tower with the trophy and whatnot. Did you enjoy that? Was it too hectic to enjoy, or was there a sense of respect and appreciation for those you had a chance to speak with about this achievement you made happen for yourself in America?
It was amazing. First of all, you know, we have Canal Plus is a really strong TV channel. Actually, they show Formula One in Europe. As you know, Formula One is the biggest racing sport in Europe, and they show IndyCar now live for the last 2 years, and it's growing. And as I tell you, I was really impressed with The amount of people who recognized me on the street.
Wow.
The amount of people that showed up at every time as I was signing autographs, and the media were very very enthused about having us on the show. So I was very impressed with the enthusiasm from French people. And it almost made me feel like I was a star. So it was pretty cool. We had a tremendous tour. IndyCar organized a really good media tour there. We did a lot of activities. I went to the Moulin Rouge, which is an incredible show that I recommend, actually. If you go to France and you want to see something very French, a little bit retro, you should go to the Moulin Rouge. It's a great time. And but we did so much, it would be hard to go through it, because it was 7 days nonstop, from 8 in the morning till usually pretty much 11 p.m. Every day. And then we even went to my hometown, and we had a home welcoming celebration.
That was so cool.
The keys of the city.
I saw the photos of that. I loved it.
Yeah, it was amazing. My hometown holds 6,800 people in the town, and more than 2,000 people showed up. So that was pretty amazing.
Wow. I wonder what the hell the other 4,000 had to do. I mean, come on.
Where the hell were they?
Well, I'd love to close on this. Of all the conversations I had in 2016 with friends and drivers and who you name it, that I enjoyed the most, our conversation at, I think it might have been Mid-Ohio, or I could be forgetting where, but about meditation, about your mental strength, how you use, I guess what you could say is maybe an alternate way of fortifying your mind and your approach to what maybe some people would expect in your role. You know, maybe they think you'd be boxing and fighting and doing really hyper-aggressive things outside of the car, so that mental muscle memory flows into the car when it comes time to drive. But you do the opposite. You actually close your eyes, close your mind, quiet yourself, and turn inward to make yourself stronger. That conversation that you and I had, which we did a story about, one of my favorite conversations of the year, I just think it's fascinating, and it makes me wonder if that's something that other drivers, hopefully none of your rivals, of course, but other drivers should consider if they're trying to look at ways to improve themselves behind the wheel.
Well, I think, you know, it's like every athlete, I think, and it's like every businessman, I think, on earth, and it's like everybody, I think, actually. It's like when you're doing a job or when you have a passion for something, you always seek to improve. And then once you get to a certain level, then you want to find, you know, you think you may have reached 100% at the way to concentrate, for example, where maybe next year the 100% could be a better 100%, or how do I improve my concentration. And I think it's, for example, but it can be, how do I improve my physical aptitude in the car? How do I have more juice at the end of the race to push harder? Do I need to be better hydrated? Do I need better food? What is it? So, you know, at the end of the day, it's your mind that's turning the steering wheel left and right and pressing the pedals the right way. So if your mind's not working well with your body, I don't believe it could work well. So that's my quest, basically, in my life, is to try to make my mind and body work together in the present moment. I think that's key to success. But I think, you know, drivers may have different opinion, different ways of seeing things, and I think, you know, as long as you go the way that works for you, and you go all in, then you're going to be successful.
Well, I remember when AJ Foyt was telling me about his yoga lessons. Is this something that for you just consider to be as important as spending 3 hours in the gym or running 20 miles to improve your cardio? And I have to imagine this quiet time where you are just focused, turning that mirror on yourself inward. I have to imagine you treat that like an activity equally as important, if not more important, than maybe some of the other things you do to prepare yourself?
Yeah, for me, it's very special. These moments for myself are very special, and I've become very diligent about it. Even on a race weekend, you can ask all my team around me. There's a block of time reserved for my time. It's called the Simon time.
Simon time.
Simon's busy right now. You can't talk to him. So it's just my time to get within myself and source my energy and get the best out of myself. Like I said, it's all about trying to get the best out of yourself, extract the 100%. So how do you do that? That's the key. It's for me. That's what works. I gotta be one with myself, with my mind, and. Yeah, that's key to me working well, but we're all different, so it might work different for other people.
And that's Simon Pagenaud, your 2016 Verizon IndyCar Series champion. The mental side of what he does is very fascinating, something that if you're a young driver or someone who just appreciates sports psychology, at least in IndyCar, Simon is one of a few, he's not the only one, but one of a few that not only embraces it, but has really made the mental side of his craft as a driver, made that a really big portion of what he uses to succeed. There are others that are true just natural talents who seemingly fall out of bed and are on the pole and winning races, and it's just done in a bit of a savant-like, sleepy way. You don't know how they do it, and you hate them because they do it so easily. And for others, they truly have to find every little thing within themselves and maximize it. And for Simon, he knows that the mental side, beyond the physical gifts, helping his brain to facilitate what he needs to do with his hands and feet and eyes, cognitive ability, it's fascinating stuff. Again, if you get a chance to speak with him and it interests you, bring it up, because he loves talking about it as well. And also, again, thoroughly enjoyed the fact that he did truly just start texting out of nowhere while combing the internet for Formula One in-car videos to try and find things that Carlos Sainz, Kevin Magnussen, Lewis Hamilton, you name it. There are a lot of drivers he named that he appreciated, found things that he liked about what they were doing. And I was asking why he was doing this in early December when he should be with his lovely lady. Mentioned that she was out, so it was just him and his dog Norman. But nonetheless, loved the fact that the champ, instead of being on a beach somewhere, sunning himself in early December and staying warm, is on the internet finding ways to get better. So that's Simon. Love the guy and appreciate the fact that he is always digging to get better. So you can find more Marshall Pruitt podcast episodes on podbean.com and on iTunes. And as always, I'm Marshall Pruitt. Thanks for listening.